Hey everybody, and welcome back to Brains, Bibles, and Beyond, where we explore worldview apologetics.
It's the most fun thing you do.
And other things.
Yeah, way beyond.
Beyond.
Not too far beyond.
So, thank you for joining us once again. We have a very special episode just for you.
We do. But first, let's take a drink out of our favorite theological receptacles.
Theological receptacle.
Oh, yeah.
So, as we get started here on our new segment, Stump the Theologian. I have a special guest speaker brought in all the way from my own house. My favorite daughter, Elizabeth, is here to read our question.
Reigning champion.
Now, we do not know what most of these are, and Joel is not supposed to have seen any of these.
Can't prepare. One. Yeah, we won't. Well, we won't pick that one, I guess. Oh, okay.
There you go.
True shuffle. All right.
What is spiritual anger?
Oh, hold on.
What is spiritual anger?
So do you mean like righteous anger? Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's a sin.
When is it good to be mad?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The technically, right, righteous indignation. That's usually what they would. But when's it good to be angry? Some people say never, right? Some people say never, never, ever. But then we do see in Scripture, God is angry here and there.
Yes, from time to time.
Usually what I hear, the illustration with that, is Jesus flipping the tables and chasing people out of the temple. He's cleansing it. I mean, there's been dozens and dozens of times throughout Scripture, God's been angry with Israel, with Judah, with the whole world, with the flood, but what's the one common denominator? It's sin. He's angry at sin. What I like to do is I like to go to Ephesians 4. If we can look that up here, I'm getting it. Ephesians 4:26. Okay? And so it's all about the new life. Okay, now that these people have trusted in Jesus Christ as their Savior, forgiveness of sins, they're born again, new creatures, putting on that new self, as mentioned in verse 24, created after the likeness of God and true righteousness and holiness. Then verse 25, therefore, having put away all that stuff, that falsehood, speaking lies, speak the truth with his neighbor. And then he goes to verse 26, and it's interesting with all these new commands and things. The first thing he says is be angry in verse 26, be angry. You're always angry, like the Hulk. It's a secret for strength. But be angry, that's a command, which that doesn't sound right, but that's why he didn't finish the sentence yet. there's not a period there yet. Be angry and do not sin. Two commands. Mm. Okay, so at the same time, angry and do not sin. Well, so then what's the point of that? I don't understand quite yet. He continues on. He says, do not let the sun go down on your anger. Now, I've heard this verse over and over be interpreted as, now, married couples, don't go to bed angry. Or even a single person, just if you still have anger brewing, get it taken care of. That's excellent advice. That's great wisdom, I think. It really does help. However, that's not coming from this verse. It says, be angry, do not sin. Then your third command, right? Do not let the sun go down in your anger. That means don't let it end. Don't let it end, because the idea of night, things end, it's rest. But it never can have rest. You to always be angry at sin. Then it gives reasoning here and says, and here the next thing you have to do, give no opportunity to the devil. So the idea is, if you are angry at sin, you're not going to be doing it, if you truly are. And so if you think about it, every time we sin, we're not so angry at it. And that's the idea. And so it's preventative. It's to help you. How do you have a proper anger of sin? It's to have a proper understanding of it. That's the stuff that mutilated Jesus on the cross. That's the stuff that prevents us from having a relationship with him, that condemns people to a lake of fire, after this life if they do not believe. So it's a big deal. So we think about these things, and we get angry at them, what it's done, how it destroys.
Supposed to be angry at the people that do sin.
See, and this is the thing. It's just at the sin. See, God is able to do this 100% of the time, where he's angry at the sin. Now, when someone is chosen to be identified with that sin, this is who I am, these unbelievers, right? And they keep rejecting him. You see him angry at them, You see God that's actually angry at people, but it's because of the sin that they have chosen to be identified with, and that's the focus. So for us, I think oftentimes we might even start out good, where we are angry at some horrible sin, but then very quickly it shifts to just angry at that person. You know, 10 years ago, they did blah, blah, blah. Okay, you're no longer just angry at the sin, you know, which is not good. It's not healthy. We lose the idea that this person is a human being that God has created that bears the image of God that Jesus Christ died for, you know, things like that. And the fundamentals, you know, and so we lose sight of who that person actually is. Like, why did God create them and give them life? And, you know, they're valuable. And so sin destroys. I'm a sinner too. Someone will not sin against me as much as I've sinned against God personally. So we remember that, and we remember how God has forgiven us, and we transfer that forgiveness to them. Forgiveness to release of judgment. However, there's still justice involved. There's God's instituted government and things like that. But anyways, there's righteous indignation.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah.
All right. Yes.
I guess we failed this time.
Yes.
All right.
I should just say no next time.
Oh, would that be lying, though? Would that be lying? Well, speaking truth in love. Okay. So.
All right. Well, thank you, Elizabeth. You may go now.
Ah, the reigning champ of questions. That's good.
On to the next one.
On to the next.
Hey, everybody. Once again, we are...
back in action.
Trying to be up on our current events. So
it's good.
This is something going on currently.
Okay.
And I know some of our other articles we go through aren't as current as we'd like. This one actually is. This is something that's going on this week.
This week.
Okay. Week of as of recording time. So when you see this, okay, it'll probably be after this. But it's still relevant.
First week of May. Okay.
Regardless of when you watch this, this is a relevant conversation. So right now there's a war going on in Israel, correct?
That is correct.
Israel has been attacked by Hamas. We're not going to get a lot of details.
A lot of bad stuff there, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even say a result of this, but it's amplified it. There's a lot of anti-Semitic stuff going on. As always, right? Like, this isn't new.
Yeah, yeah.
The Bible was full of it. It's still happening. You know, obviously we had the Holocaust in our last century, and a lot of that same spirit is still alive and well and going strong. Mm-hmm. And just with current events going on, it's amplified once again. And you know, you hear some of the same idiotic evil stuff being said.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Like a good government always does, they decide to step in and help, right?
Okay.
Because this
is Israel you're talking about.
No. This is the American government. This is what the American government wants to do to help.
Stepped in and helped. Okay.
So, yikes. Right. Like I think it was Reagan that the scariest thing ever said is, you know, I'm from the government. I'm here to help. Right. Like
there's some truth.
There's some truth. So anyway, there's anti-Semitic stuff happening. Now, it's already against the law to be anti-Semitic, basically, because you can't have any hate speech towards any group of people, really, because it's already...
I'm always against hating a people group.
And hating a people group because they're just part of a people group is just...
Yeah, yeah, not good.
Beyond stupidity. All right, what's going on here? People that advocate for this are generally the people that always... Anyway, it doesn't matter. So,
a lot of build up.
We need a new rule, need a new law. So that this just passed in our Congress this week.
Okay.
So it has not gone to the Senate yet. It's passed the House, as far as I know.
Okay. All right.
Unless I'm misreading this article. So they come up with a new rule that says you can't have any anti-Semitic speech. Now that may or may not. There's argument that this is just straight up against the First Amendment. Sure. Of freedom of speech, right? So that's a conversation which you may or may not want to address.
Okay.
But the example they give supposedly in this thing as an example of anti-Semitic speech is the claim that Jesus killed the Jews. Or that, sorry, that the Jews killed Jesus.
Oh, God. Like,
claiming that Jews killed Jesus or blood libel is their example that's given in this thing as...
Really? That was thought through.
Yeah. So,
wow.
So there's a bunch of people saying, hey, yeah, we don't want to be anti-Semitic either because obviously that's wrong. And obviously we believe the Bible, which means we're supposed to love the Jews and pray for Jerusalem and all the things the Bible teaches.
Right, right.
But the Bible says, like, there's a few spots in the Bible where it specifically says, you Jews killed Jesus, right?
Hey.
So, in essence, yeah. Are you trying to backhandedly ban the Bible? Now... Or naturally, they're defending, saying, no, that's not what we mean. We're saying, like, because this claim that the Jews killed Jesus is something that has been used through history as well as a reason to hate the Jews. You guys killed Jesus, yes, right? Like, that's led to anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And that's why they put this in there. But those words are technically in the Bible. Now, there's a lot more, when you think through it, there's a lot more, obviously, to it than that. So,
yeah,
that's where we're at. So, we want to address, what does the Bible actually say about, did the Jews kill Jesus? Because those words are in there.
But it didn't.
They didn't.
It was the Romans.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
He was killed on a cross.
They begged for it.
As
you always say, they, you know, you're talking about the mob that was present.
Yes.
Yelling, crucify him, crucify
which
him.
Which would have gone by the leadership, right?
And they said, free Barnabas. That's their choice.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So those are the facts.
Yeah. So those are the facts. So,
okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, but that's scary stuff.
Yeah. So when you're starting to ban certain phrases from being said, and those phrases are in the Bible, so now you're like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm against anti-Semitism too.
Correct.
Very much so.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't be any more against it. I don't know if I like this bill. So, this is what's going on.
Well, give that example.
How we as Christians, how are we supposed to respond to stuff like this? So we go get up in arms and say, hey, you know what? You can't do this. Or you know, what are we supposed to do?
I think it's this response in Acts 4 of Peter and John when they went before the religious leaders of Israel, Jerusalem, and they said, you're not allowed to preach his name anymore. They go... You know what? You can decide whether we're wrong or right, but we can do nothing else but to talk about what we've seen and we heard and, you know, Jesus, him crucified, resurrected and all that. So I think it's the same, you know, basic response. They weren't mean about it. They were just bold and they're even astonished by their boldness. You know, these are uneducated. They don't have a formal education. And here they are speaking like... very confidently about things.
Yeah, like they have some power behind them. What they're saying.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think that's the simple response. And there's a reason that I think the New Testament was written with all that persecution background from Jews and Romans, you know, as a whole. And it's because so we can know how to react in those times.
Yeah. So bottom line, I would say is that if this does end up going through the Senate and getting passed, signed, it's not going to stop us, right?
I'm not going to change.
It would be unfortunate that the wording in this is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate to even have to have a bill like this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the bottom line is we know, reading our Bible, that things like this are going to happen and continue to happen more and more frequently. And
right.
The application for us is, if this is not something that's going to outlaw the Bible, those things will happen.
It's like this, though, too. You preach it. Why do you have to say that phrase? You know, what you can do is you can focus on even Isaiah, where it was the will of the Father to crush him, right? It was the Father did it.
Mm.
And then who did he use? The Roman government. And, you know, yes, there was Jewish people that were cheering it on, but it didn't matter what the Jews did. God's will be done.
Yeah, this event was going to happen.
Yes.
Because it was the plan.
Right. It's like the Son of Man will be betrayed, but woe to him who did it. You know, that's a paraphrase, but Jews scared.
Yeah.
So it's like it had to happen, but you chose to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. So I would just change. I just wouldn't have that wording.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, they should rephrase how some of this is written. But I don't know if they're going to or not. Not a politician. I don't. I don't know laws. And this is stuff that like it's still like now they do the negotiating part of it and people are like I don't like that. And we'll see what actually happens. But and naturally they're saying that's not what we mean. We're not banning the First Amendment.
It's history.
You can't read the Bible. What we're saying is you can't go around saying things against the Jews, which we all agree with.
But that'd be like saying if you recount the Holocaust in a history class to say, well, that's hate speech against Germans, you know.
Yeah,
it's like no, that's not what's going on.
No, yeah, exactly. And, and that's what the people defend and say. You know, we're not like, but we also trust our government so much that we can see how 30 years from now how can this get twisted to say, oh, you there's can't say record, that. That's against the law to say those words. So anyway,
good.
This event. Is something that's going on though.
Supportive.
This is going on, and we can't just stick our head in the sand and pretend like. Right. Things aren't happening.
Right.
We do need to be aware.
Yeah.
And we do need to pray for the peace in Israel.
That's good.
So
thanks for that story.
We're back again. You may have noticed there's someone else in our studio today.
What?
Yeah. Imagine that. So anyway, this is Teresa Davidson with Chains Interrupted, and she is co-founder and CEO of Chains Interrupted. So Teresa, can you just introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about Chains Interrupted.
Sure. Well, I just appreciate being here. Thank you for caring about this issue. I'm Teresa Davidson, and as he said, I'm the co-founder and CEO of Chains Interrupted, which is a nonprofit that fights against human trafficking in Eastern Iowa, the whole state, the nation, and beyond. We contend for the freedom of youth against human trafficking and exploitation. That's our mission statement.
Mm-hmm. All right. Awesome. So,
What would you say if someone, I think there's a lot of people out there that are not very aware of, they know that it exists, right? They know it exists. Yeah. But I don't think they're aware of the magnitude of the issue. And sometimes we think of places far off, you know, in these other countries, gotta be careful, you know, go down a certain alley or something. And it's very distant. It's always very distant. Wherever anyone lives, their neighborhood, anywhere in the country, they think it's a distant thing. So just can you help us out a little bit with that? On how close to home this might actually be for some of our listeners, and just kind of the reality of the magnitude of the problem.
Absolutely, and you raise a really good point. And I was one of those people. So I first discovered human trafficking existed in Africa on a medical mission trip. So I'm a nurse practitioner by trade, and I used to do medical mission trips where we would set up a free medical clinic and in areas that people didn't have healthcare. And what I discovered was that traffickers were using the long line of people that were waiting to get into the clinic to groom them into trafficking.
Oh.
They were coming up and using like the promise of a better life or a fraudulent romantic relationship, a fake friendship, a fake job offer, whatever they could to use them to basically exploit them for their own personal gain.
Wow.
And so I thought to myself, this was in Africa, right? So I thought to myself, well, thank God I live in the United States.
Yeah, it doesn't happen here.
Where that doesn't happen.
Right. In Iowa.
Right?
Yeah, right.
So I came back to the United States to form mission teams to research and go over there and take care of this international problem. And I discovered that it was right here all along. And again, naively thought to myself, oh, thank God I live in Iowa. Mm. Maybe this happens in California or New York, but not in my beloved state.
Yeah.
Iowa is not exempt at all from this heinous crime. And in fact, maybe even surprisingly, it's prevalent in rural areas because traffickers can hide more easily there. We're Iowa nice, you know.
Yeah.
We are a little naive when it comes to the evils of this crime, how prevalent it is. And so there's less police presence, less DHS presence, less, you know, people monitoring things.
Right.
Sure.
So, it's definitely here. And one of the things that, is really sad. I used to work at Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids as the anti-human trafficking coordinator. And it was a position created for me there. It was the first of its kind in Iowa, only the fifth in the nation. And we thought that that position would be for people coming through the hospital system, that maybe somebody victimized would come through the emergency room and that we could help them.
Okay.
And I sat at my desk and I told administration that there might be 10 people in a year that we could help that way. Mm-hmm. So imagine my surprise when the very first year I got 58 referrals.
Oh, wow.
58. Mm. Not all of them were coming through the hospital system, but there was a place to call now. There was somebody to listen now. There was somebody that was training on what it actually looked like and what to do. And so people were calling from all over. The library, you know, they were calling. Police departments were calling. Even other advocates were calling. Mm. People that were victimized in the community were calling. It was... Yeah.
So is that when you really started to see how bad it was locally?
So you started to realize that
it's a lot more than we're even thinking then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I knew that it was bad, but then we started getting some solid data. So 58 without advertising. Like we just went on the news one time and said, we have this program, and word of mouth, you know, it just got around and people were calling. The second year I was there, there were 73 referrals, the third year 92. And these are unique individuals, not the same people that were calling the year before. They still called, but it just added, you know, on. So
what was the year, that first year, what year was that?
2018.
Okay. I got you.
Okay. So when did Chains Interrupted start then? Was that in 2018 or when did you guys get started?
Yeah. So Chains Interrupted has a unique history where it formed from the merge of two organizations. So I started this whole work, that whole mission trip in Africa was in 2010.
Okay.
And then in 2012, I started working in, you know, the community with sisters and brothers collaborating against human trafficking and Cedar Rapids Gives. And there was hardly anything going on in our community for this. I had never heard of it before. And those two organizations ended up dissolving and Chains Interrupted was formed.
Okay.
So roughly 2014, but officially in 2016.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
So what kind of numbers are we seeing today, this year?
Well, it keeps growing. And yet the pandemic, you know, we saw growth, and then less reports. But we knew that it was actually getting worse during the pandemic and that it was changing significantly. And it did. The change in it was that it went from being in person to much more online. And that was online grooming as well as online connecting and online exploitation. Like we're seeing skyrocketing numbers of children being exploited online and videos being produced. And now it's going to change even more with this AI.
Out,
the artificial intelligence. It's just insane what's happening. I just was on a meeting today for the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, and they had a report for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They have a cyber tip line that reports all of these cyber, you know, reports for kids, multiple different kinds. And they had their 2023 report released. Excuse me. And so they were reporting skyrocketing numbers. It just made me sick to my stomach how many children are being groomed online, how many children are being asked to meet up online. And, you know, they're asked online to meet up in person or online, or asked to send a sexually explicit photo or video of themselves. And then that's exploited online. And once it's online, they can't get it back.
No, it's there forever.
Yeah. Right. It's ruining their lives because they can't hide from it either. So can't move away.
What is the percentage of minors versus adults that are, I guess, being trafficked?
Yeah.
It's both, right?
It's not just kids. Both.
It's not just adults. So.
Yes. And let me preface that answer by saying that statistics are really hard to come by in this field.
Okay.
It's an underground crime. And also people, even the people that are being victimized by human trafficking, often don't understand that that's what they're being victimized by, because many times traffickers groom them with a false relationship. So they think they're in a romantic relationship, or they think they're with a friend or a new family. And so they don't understand that the actual title for this is human trafficking. So they might not report it, or they might not say that when they come to the emergency room or get arrested for something or go to an advocate, you know. And so numbers are really hard to come by. But in my experience with the Mercy Medical Center position, those 58, those 73, those 92, about 25% were kids.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, different places will report different numbers. Sure. Nationwide, they're reporting roughly 53% are kids.
Okay. All right. That's what I was seeing. Okay.
That's a big problem with statistics all around in this way, because there's no omniscient being collecting this data. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, things can, you know, we always take like a control group, right? You know, even with politics, when that stuff's coming around, and what do? They go to a certain area a lot of times, and, you know, are you checking, you know, both day and night, weekdays and weekends? Are you going to different parts of town, you know, different, you know, socioeconomic levels and whatnot? And, and so you really got to see where the data is coming from even. And, and I think one of the things that I would highlight you were talking about was just the idea of you know, what's getting reported and how is it being reported.
Right.
Because it could be the problem that's even getting reported, but they're not reporting it with that catchphrase, or the term, you know, human trafficking or whatever it is. So then that becomes part of the problem with awareness.
Yes.
And which is why, you know, one of the reasons why it's so important to have you on today and is just to kind of see that. I was just talking to a police officer from Ankeny, where I'm at, just a couple days ago, just happened to be. And he revealed that he is the number one crime, the number one problem, anyways, in Ankeny was child pornography. Even I think a lot of that's even linked. A lot of that. Mm-hmm. It just kind of turns your stomach a bit. What's really going on out there? And there's a lot of dark stuff. And I think, you know, a lot of times it's not pretty enough to make it to the mainstream news. It makes people feel too uncomfortable. We want to sell things.
Yes.
And so we're not going to put this out there.
Freedom of speech.
Yep. And I, you know, I don't want to get too political, but, you know, there's be careful here. I don't want to put you in any positions as well. But just the idea of, you know, there's people of power and influence and money that are involved in these evil things. And so I think a lot of things get, you know, covered up or pushed to the side because of that. I also wonder, you can choose to speak to this or not, but you know, just with the a lot more people coming over the border and things, I think there's a lot of victimizing there where they're snatching up people that don't know exactly what's going on. Would you say that is the case, that increases numbers?
I do not mind talking about that at
all. Okay, okay.
In fact, I just got back from November speaking at the JUST conference. If you've heard of Shared Hope International, they put on a JUST conference every year, and it's an international conference, and I was honored to speak on this very topic at that conference in D.C. because Iowa has a huge problem with child labor trafficking. And I've been working with law enforcement and various state agencies and federal agencies to try to combat this, because what's happening, and I've been a missionary to Guatemala for years. In fact, went down and lived there for a month to do research about human trafficking, what's happening in Guatemala. And so it breaks my heart that many of these children that are coming are from Guatemala. And so it's just, you know, the Lord has such an amazing way of showing you what you're supposed to do, right? So the story behind this entire way that I got involved in this is that I was invited to an Iowa Law Enforcement Academy presentation down at the downtown Cedar Rapids Library. They had asked me to come and speak to the law enforcement officers there and bring a survivor if I could, so that they could also tell their story so that law enforcement officers could understand it a little better. And I'm sitting there listening to this presentation, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I kind of know everything that she's saying already. And up pops a slide with my hometown, town of 2,500 people in rural Iowa, with children from Guatemala being labor trafficked.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, well, that is exactly what I'm supposed to be involved with, you know, and fighting and helping. It was like a 2x4 hitting over my head. And so I went back to my hometown, which I hadn't been there for a long time. You know, once you move away, sometimes you just kind of get on with different things and time goes fast. And I went back and they're like, yeah, we've had this huge problem. And basically what's happening is that people in Guatemala, Nicaragua, different places, you know, they have a hard time. They have a hard life.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of poverty. There's a lot of violence. There's gangs. Parents don't want that for their kids. And so along comes this person who will say, you know, I'll take your child to the United States. If you give me $15,000,
wow.
$15,000 US dollars. Yes. I will take your child to the United States, and I will make sure that they get a good education and a good job. And with the money that America has, you pay this $15,000 off in less than 6 months. So no problem, no problem. So these people obviously don't have $15,000. So then they give them the deeds to their house or their family business or their compound or their farm.
Okay.
And they give them their deeds. And then they take their kids and they're coyotes now, right? And so the coyotes will transport these children up through Mexico and to the border. And somewhere along the way, these children are given a little slip of paper that has somebody's name and number on it. And they're told, this is your uncle. You tell them this is your uncle. You tell them this is your auntie. You tell them this is your brother. And this is your sponsor, right? This is what they're saying to tell. So with the number of people coming across our border right now, if a border patrol agent gets a slip of paper that somebody already has a sponsor, they are like, thank God. Like, I don't have to do that work. You know, there's so many.
Oh, sure.
So immediately they just accept that and they call the Department of Health and Human Services, who then, through our tax dollars now, come and get the child and take them into the arms of the trafficker. These kids have no idea who these people are on the slip of paper. They say they're their uncle, but they don't know them.
Yeah.
I know this for a fact because I've worked with many, many of these kids. A lot of these so-called sponsors are sponsoring up to 29, 30 kids. You know, and so the kids get then to small town Iowa, and the sponsors then say, you know, you need to work. And so they'll put them to work a lot of times in our agricultural area, our farming factories, meat packing plants, egg packing plants, organic farms, places that need manual labor. And our schools are reporting to me that these kids are falling asleep in class because they still go to school, but they're working from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. and then going to school. Okay. And so they're falling asleep in class, partly because they don't understand the language very well either. No. So, you know, they're bored. But, it's a terrible problem. And, you know, they have this $15,000 debt to pay off. So then they do get paid from the job. So a lot of them are telling me that they get $600 a week. But then the sponsors or the coyotes or the traffickers or the contractors, whatever you want to call them, will then take 550 of that. So out of 600 a week, they get to keep 50, and then they have to pay for other things that they need. But the coyotes are taking that back because they're saying, well, you owe 15,000. Now there's interest. We forgot to tell you that there'd be interest on this. And by the way, as we took you up through the different countries, there were problems that we didn't anticipate. So you owe more. And so they just add to the debt. And then they'll tell them, now you need to pay for your living expenses and your rent is $900 a month. And they're living in a garage with 10 other people and they're all having to pay $900 a month. Your clothes, your food is all costing me. So you must pay.
So you never get out of debt. And so you're
never
then trapped never in slavery forever.
Yes. Yeah. So what are they supposed to do? Like, they're here without documents, so they're told if you go to law enforcement, you'll be deported.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the language very well. They don't know their rights. They don't know who's helping them. There are so many of them that it's, you know, going to be unsustainable to help. They can't go back to their country because their family will lose their business or their farm or their compound or their house because they've given the deed over. And they're also under threat. So the traffickers will tell them, if you say anything or do anything, we'll kill your family.
Hmm. And how old are these kids then in general? Like, what's this age range?
The ones that I've met,
at least for the labor side,
Anywhere from 13 up into their early 20s.
Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Yep.
That's tremendous. And then, you know, what are, is there any way, like, how would you find out? I'm trying to word how to ask this question. What would be the best way for you to estimate the numbers that are involved in this? Is there any way to do that, or how would you go about it?
I do know that you can look at schools and see how many children are in our schools, because, you know, our schools do provide education for documented or undocumented, and I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But you can look and see, you know, that. And I can tell you, you can, you know, watch to see who falls asleep in class, and and it's kind of obvious. There was a situation where one of the little guys had really accelerated and was really showing a lot of promise and being a leader in his community. And so he got put into this kind of a gifted program, and they got to go on a trip. Well, when the teacher reached out to his sponsor to see if he could go on the trip, the sponsor told her that he had to check with the business to see if the business would allow him to leave. And not to take vacation, but to actually leave. Like, the business was in control of this child. And it was a huge red flag for this person, this teacher. And she reached out to me and said, "What do you think?" And I'm like, "Yes, absolutely." And trying to meet with them. But they're, you know, what do you do? I mean, they're terrified.
Yeah.
And yeah. I can tell them that, you know, we can provide protection for them in the United States. But I can't provide protection for their family in Guatemala if the, you know, if they renege on their deal that they made. Yeah. And so that's a huge barrier. There's so like many barriers.
Yeah, so the only way to solve it then is you have to take down the whole chain, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even so, I mean, it'd be easy for me with the contacts that I have to come into this town and bring down the hammer, right?
Yeah.
And I know this is a contractor, take them out. But I can tell you that if that happens, that 60 to 100 families will be out of work immediately, and they'll just replace them with another contractor. It's not, you know, we have to get to the core. Because
there's so much money involved in this.
Yes.
Yeah. You only catch the sloppy criminals, right? Yes. It's, you know, who ends up in jail? Usually it's the, you know, what you call the dumb criminals. You know, they get caught, right?
Or the victims.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. You've already talked about that a little bit.
Yes.
Which is a shame. You know, they don't understand that they're caught up in this thing to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. So what can, I have four children
mm-hmm.
running around. I have another one due here at the end of June.
Oh, congratulations. Yes.
And so that really concerns me, though, you know, for my boys are 12 and 10, they're getting a little older, they understand, you know, some more things. There's it's still possible that they could, you know, somehow get into something like this in various ways. I think my 2 and 4 year old girl,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think about these kids like this and other people's kids, right, too, but what do I do as a parent? To try to help my children not to fall victim. Like yes. if, because you know, there's so many different situations where someone could take them or, as you said, befriend them, mm-hmm. Fake friendship, fake relationship, you know, da da da. So what advice would you give?
Okay. Well, that's a big question.
It is.
Yes. And I would start by telling you that this happens to boys as well as girls.
Mm-hmm.
So don't, you know, rest because you have boys.
Right.
And especially with boys, I would, I would even go back and just strike that comment because girls are getting involved with pornography as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that parents typically have conversations with their kids about things of danger, like don't smoke, don't drink, don't have sex, don't, you know, all this stuff. But we don't talk about pornography. And I know of quite a few people who have gotten caught up in the addiction of pornography, which happens more often than you think, this addiction.
Yes, it's absolutely.
And they didn't know enough to not look at the first thing that pops up. And with online porn now, it's searching for our kids.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. it's there no matter where they are online, just trying to reach them and suck them in because, you know, of money.
Yes.
And so we really do need to start having conversations with our kids about that. Speaking of online safety, we just absolutely have to. Children just are not developmentally capable of handling what is being thrown at them online. So we have to be there. We have to be looking at what they're looking at online. Who are they talking to online? There's so many apps that traffickers will have them install on their computer, their iPad, their phone, their gaming device, whatever, to hide the messages, to hide the photos that you will never know. So you have to have open relationships with your kids. You have to have open conversations. If they do something dumb, like send a sexually explicit photo or video, they have to be able to tell you that. And you have to be able to not, you know, react like we want to react, you know.
So they can't get blackmailed that way.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
Because that's right. A huge thing right now. And we have to be able to react quickly to get that offline. And there are ways to do it. But if people have downloaded it, or screenshot it, then that's still, they can upload it at another time. So time is of the essence with that. And there is help with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They have a website called Take It Down that they'll look for photos and videos that have been uploaded for about children and take those down. Okay. So there is help now for that. And it's a really important resource. But yeah, you have to be able to be approachable for your kids to come and be able to say, I did this thing and I need help, and not freak out and punish them or anything like that. At least not right away.
Yeah. It's a tough tightrope to walk.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, look around in your family, in your social circle, in your church, in your school, wherever, and who's vulnerable. You know, because traffickers are going to target the vulnerable. They're going to target people that don't feel very good about themselves, or that are getting bullied, or don't have a friend group, or lost a parent, or, you know, just the vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to target them. And if we can target them, we as a Christian community, we as parents, we as good adults can target them and come alongside them and be there for them, then they are much less likely to fall victim to a trafficker coming along and saying, hey, I'll be there for you. Because that's how it happens. The grooming process is that a trafficker will target the vulnerable, and then they come in and they want to gain their trust because they want to get information from them, right? They want to know, what is it you need? Because their main goal is to be that savior, be the person that gets them, the only one that understands them, the only one that can provide for them, and just start to kind of push all the other people out of their lives to be the main one, the only one. It's kind of a codependent type of relationship where they just are addicted to that person. And then once they have them on the hook like that, that's when the abuse begins. They'll turn on them. And then the person finds out that they're not the only one, that this is, you know, not what they signed up for, but it's too late. And by you know, a lot of times they pushed everybody else away. They didn't realize it. The family didn't know that this was what was happening. They just knew that they had some sort of, you know, controlling person in their life. And so if we can, you know, prevent that, that will go a very long way.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so is the bigger problem then, you know, the contacting online versus just the straight-up kidnapping?
Yeah.
Right?
By far.
Okay.
The number one way traffickers are grooming and luring our kids into trafficking is online. On social media and the movies, it's more Taken. Like, we've all seen the movie Taken, right? It's the crazy white van that pulls up, you know, this creepy white van. It's the Walmart parking lot. You have to be careful of. No, that can happen. That can happen.
And that's easy to teach your kids about, you know, look out for the white van.
Yeah. Right. Know? Right. Don't go with the guy that has lost his puppy and has ice cream for you, you know, whatever. But are we talking to them about the person that wants to play a game with them on their, you know, gaming device that has internet?
Just some random stranger who wants to play a game, it's which happens all the time.
All the time.
Well, then there's another issue I've heard of. I wonder if you speak to this. Is a lot of people, they talk about stranger danger, but so often it's those that are already close, like even family members.
Yes.
And so it's more like strange behavior is what we need to train. But you want to speak to that a little bit?
No, I'm so glad you brought that up, because Polaris, that runs the National Human Trafficking Hotline, they reported last year that 44% of survivors that called in said that their trafficker was a family member. Mm. A family member. A
what
blood
percentage was that?
44%.
Yes.
And if they're not a family member, blood related, the vast majority know their trafficker. They knew them. They're a family friend or, you know, something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's, you know, the online stuff starts out being strangers, but then they feel like they know them, right? In one of my presentations, I have a slide that is a really scary slide, and it's this older guy that's creeping on the online, and it says, meet 10-year-old Becky's 12-year-old internet friend. And I show the kids that, and I ask them first, I say, how long would you need to know someone online before you met up with them in person? And I get all kinds of different answers, you know, 6 months. No, then they argue with you. No, I need a year. So then I show that picture and I'm like, how long would it take this guy to turn into that 12-year-old girl who loves volleyball and puppies that's talking to 10-year-old Becky. They're like, well, he's never going to turn into that. I'm like, that's my point. Like, this is not a 12-year-old girl. Right. He's pretending to be a 12-year-old girl. Yeah. And so they get the point, but we talk about never meeting up, you know, with people that you've met online, and mm-hmm. always, you know, showing your parents who you're talking to. But like you had mentioned, even in person, you know, there are, we talk to kids about how to tell if an adult is trustworthy, right? Mm-hmm. Because we've seen doctors, nurses, pastors, lawyers, every family members arrested for trafficking.
Yeah.
So these are people that children should, we teach them that you can trust, right? You know, don't let anyone touch you there except for mommy, daddy, and the doctor, right? Well, then you see a doctor arrested for human trafficking and you're thinking,
not the doctor, you know, anymore.
Now what? The list. Yeah. Yeah. And so with kids, we teach them, like, especially about family members, that if there's someone that treats you differently than they treat other kids, like they want to get you alone more, or they tell you that they want you to keep a secret for them, like what they do with you is a secret, yeah. or just between us, or
I mean, that's the biggest one I've heard.
Yep.
Is the secret. And it starts out, I'm sorry to take over there,
nope,
but I just
good. Go ahead.
I just, it gets, you know, I get passionate about it too. And it, you know, it'll be something even as simple as, like, at a church, and you have maybe the guy or lady that might find a kid playing the ball in a room. Yeah. They go in there and they just play that ball, and they play that, and they spend that time with them, and then just say, "Hey, I really like you, and you're not like anybody else," and just like you're saying, mm-hmm. and then they'll just share something that's harmless.
Yep.
Because the kid might share that right now. Yep. It's in the beginning of the relationship. Can you keep that a secret? Can you keep that, like, wow? Yeah, I can't talk to anyone else like this, and you know. And you're right. And the kids, especially those, as you mentioned already, that are insecure, they're starved for attention. They've had some bad, you know, situations and neglected perhaps or something. This is their first time. They're getting this tons of encouragement, yeah. attention. They've never had this or eaten it up. They'll do anything to keep it.
Yep.
And so I like what you said earlier, that the Christian community, the body of Christ, mm-hmm. we need to come around these people. We need to find them first,
yep.
and give them scriptural encouragement, mm-hmm. Show them the community of Christ,
yes.
and they're not alone. They're not worthless. There's identity, value, and community in Christ here. Amen. And you don't need to go anywhere else. I think that alone solves a lot yes. of problems. Okay. It's not about me now. So, cause that was just so valuable what you said there.
Yeah. Right? No, yeah. it's really good what you were saying too. And you know, it's just, it's so hard, because if we can prevent this, that's the key. That's the key, because I've seen hundreds of people that have experienced human trafficking, and mm-hmm. the trauma that they've endured, they'll live with it forever.
Yeah.
Families will say, you know, they've never been the same, mm-hmm. and they're not, you know,
right.
it's a complex, deep rooted trauma that changes you forever. Mm-hmm. And so we really do, need to prevent it. And not just so that they don't have this, but just because it's just so evil that no one should experience it.
So what about somebody who's in trafficking, who is a victim? If they're listening to this, what's the help for them? What do they do? How do they get out? How do they get over it? And what are the steps for them?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And I'm really glad you asked that, because the last statement that I made it seem like there's no hope for them. Mm-hmm. And that's not true at all. They may never be the same, but some of them have, you know, just really found a lot of recovery and even better lives than they had before. But there is a National Human Trafficking Hotline, and that number is 1-888-373-7888.
Say it one more time.
There's also the Iowa Victim Service Call Center. And you can text these places. There's online chats for it. And each of these websites have a immediate, like, a safe close. So if you just click there, it goes to a pizza parlor, restaurant, or something like that, you know, so sure. that if someone catches you online, it's safe.
Yeah.
So they can call those hotlines for help. There's usually advocates like me and different, organizations mm-hmm. like Chains Interrupted in each community. Around Iowa, around the nation. If someone would need to get into a safe house, They can call those hotlines or one of the advocacy agencies. Even domestic violence and sexual assault advocates, they're aware of these now, and a lot of them will help people that have been victimized by human trafficking. So there's a lot more help now than there was. And we can get people that have been victimized here, you know, in this area, to another state to have a safe place to be and restoration, because
get them out of the environment.
Get them out of the environment so that they're safe, and then also not triggered all the time by the trauma that they experienced. So there's housing, there's, you know, counseling in those places. A lot of, you know, times people want to stay in their community and kind of recover on their own, and that's a little harder because the resources aren't as prevalent as if they go into a restoration home, but they're there and we can help them too. You know, Chains Interrupted focuses on youth, and we help kids, but we can definitely provide resources for adults to get help.
Okay.
That's awesome. Yeah. So what if someone wants to get involved with your ministry? What do they do?
So we have a outreach director named Nikki Stallman, who would love to meet with them and help them figure out where they could plug in best, like what ministry they really enjoy, or, you know, what area that they'd like to get in. We have two kind of levels of volunteers. One is our volunteers, which, you know, walk in parades and do different fundraisers and different things like that, that are maybe how you start out. But we have dedicated volunteer group called the Chain Breakers. And this group is of people who are very, you know, dedicated, and they're vetted and they're trained specifically in human trafficking. And they do things like go into schools or churches or church youth groups or, you know, organizations that work with high-risk kids and present the canned presentations that we have to kids or adults. We have chain breakers that work booths. They do a lot of things for us that maybe take a little bit more knowledge, and we do vet everyone that is around any kids. So
I'm assuming you guys provide the training then for them as well. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So they can go to our website, you know, they could email info@chainsinterrupted.com or go to chainsinterrupted.com.
Yeah, and we'll put the links in the,
all of
the
description and stuff. We'll have the description. Yeah.
yeah.
Perfect.
That's good.
All right. So the big question, how do we stop this?
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like human trafficking kind of sits on a three-legged stool. So we have the people victimized. And we can go and we can try to prevent, and we can try to get the people that are victimized out all day, and they're just going to replace them with someone else. It's too easy. We have too many vulnerable people. We have too many people that don't feel really worthy about themselves. People coming across the border, as we left, you know, mentioned before. So that's kind of a non-winning battle, which we will continue to fight. However, that's not the answer to how we stop it. Then you have the traffickers. Yeah. Now, that's involving, you know, greed and money, and a lot of times their own personal trauma. Maybe they were raised in, you know, in a way that they feel like they need to take control back of their own lives, too. Or maybe this is familial. They're just passing it on. And they're going to just keep coming, too. So if you look at the other leg of the stool, that's the demand.
The consumer.
Yeah. And this is a business model. And I kind of equate it to, like, you know, rotary phones. Nobody uses a rotary phone anymore, so we don't make them. We don't go get them. We don't sell them. So if no one was buying, then we would have no reason to have trafficking.
Yeah.
And so we need to stop the people that are buying. And who are the people that are buying? It's you and me. It's like everybody that we know. It's not the people that you think. It's the people that we work with, that we go to school with, that we sit next to at church. I mean, it's just, I think that you hit the nail on the head earlier when you were talking about pornography, because I really do believe that pornography plays a huge role in trafficking.
And the statistics for pornography are unreal. I mean, some of the latest stuff I'm seeing, it's somewhere between 95 to 100% of kids at the age of 11 are when they're getting exposed and addicted to pornography.
Yes, and it's getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
And it's no longer, you know, having to go down and find a magazine, either buy one or find one, or, you know, it's now it's just online. And I testified before the Iowa House last year telling them that we need to put help a device, like a device filter on the phones, because if you do a search for anything, you know, pretty soon pornography images come up.
Yeah, even with safe search on.
Yes.
It doesn't stop it.
Yes. So you're, you know, you're an 11-year-old kid, right? And this comes up and it's shocking and a little exciting. And if you click on it accidentally, even off you go.
Well, half the videos play automatically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And if you, you know, it just gets in and then they don't know what to do with that. And so they watch and, you know, and here we go.
Yeah.
But I know survivors of human trafficking that will say that people will bring them porn videos and say, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And so this is 100%, you know, part of the problem. And, you know, as a nurse practitioner, I know physiology of the brain. And so pornography acts like a drug in the brain, and it releases those chemicals, those dopamine chemicals and I don't want to bore you with all of that.
I think it's really good, though. I was just talking to someone. I've had all these conversations recently. It's really interesting, by accident.
God knows.
But I was explaining to somebody that the way the brain works with the pathways and stuff. You know, every time you choose to do something, it's just re-networking your brain.
Yes.
And how it works.
Yes.
And so, you know, that dopamine hit. That dopamine hit is like, you know, you win. You have sugar. You have heroin. You know. In pornography, it's all the same. And so then you know, like you have those phrases, you know, ain't nothing like the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, people talk like that, or they're always chasing the dragon. They want to get that big feeling again. And so that's the issue with pornography, is it starts, you know, real small. I mean, it's still evil, but it's on a smaller, more shallow end.
Mm-hmm.
And then it doesn't do the same thing that it did before.
Right.
You always have to have a new video, a new image, a new person.
Yes.
Deeper, more violent.
The same one. And then younger.
Been there, done that.
Yes. Yep.
You need the new image.
Mm-hmm.
So people, sometimes we're the best person to justify our own sinfulness.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people, they listen and they're like, well, I'm not doing, you know, so bad. I'm only doing, and they'll, whatever you're saying in your head right now, if you're listening, you're wrong. And I'd be open to say, as you know, as a young guy, I was caught up in pornography. And I will say there is hope in Christ.
Yes.
There is hope in Christ. There is victory to be had. But the first thing you got to do is expose it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to kill it.
Yeah. And you got to admit it's wrong.
Yes.
To start with, you know.
Absolutely.
And once again, it's not just something you're doing alone. Right. I mean, we just heard. You're the cause of someone else being stuck in slavery because of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not a victimless crime. It's terrible.
So I often ask.
What's that?
I was so many times in those, you know, pornography videos and things that they're victims of trafficking.
Yes.
Even, you know, participating.
That's who they are.
And so often.
Very often. I even ask my adult audiences all the time, you know, if you're watching a video of pornography, how do you know that the people that are in that have consented? How do you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people say, well, because they're, you know, having a great time, you can tell. It's like, no, I know survivors of human trafficking that they were forced to pretend like they were having the time of their lives, or they were beaten within an inch of it.
Mm-hmm.
They had to pretend, or they filmed it again. You know, you didn't act good enough, so we're going to do it again. We're going to do it again. There's many survivors coming forward saying that. So you really don't know. And interestingly, when I was working at Mercy Medical Center one year, I got a call from a porn star in Los Angeles, and he had Googled healthcare and human trafficking and came up with my name. And the reason that he had Googled that was because he was having so many repeated exposures to STDs that he was worried about his health. And then he was questioning whether he was trafficked or not. And I said, well, tell me more about that. And he said that he had signed consent waivers, he had signed contracts, he had signed all that, but that it didn't really, it always went a step further than what he had signed up for. And it always seemed like he had to sign them. He never really felt like he was free to not sign them, because once you're in that industry, you really have a hard time getting out.
Wow.
It's almost like a gang, he said. And that was his word. And so I said, well, if you feel like, you know, trafficking is basically force, fraud, or coercion. You're physically forced, you're tricked through fraud, or you're coerced psychologically through guilt, shame, loyalty, you know, whatever. Sure. And so if you feel that that's what has happened, that you were forced or frauded or coerced into doing this, then yeah, that's trafficking.
Wow.
And so it's just an interesting, yeah.
So it's eye-opening.
Yeah.
It's good. I think a lot of people are taking this in and learning a lot, and maybe there's a lot that can be identified and help take care of. And, you know, and of course, I think we all agree, the ultimate solution is making disciples.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because if someone is born again and then on that path of sanctification, being more and more like Christ, those things would not be happening, right. You know, at least, at the very least, on a much smaller scale. Yes. So it is truly the big solution. So we do need to take action and do all the things that has been mentioned this whole episode, but not at the expense, you know. So the number one activity is sharing the gospel. Amen. Is discipling each other. Because as you even said, the person in the church seat next to you, right? Mm-hmm. They could be the big problem. So just because someone's showing up and looking nice, has a good job and things like that, doesn't mean that they're not involved in these things.
And Satan attacks the ones that are trying, you know, it could be any of us. Like, it just could be any of us at any time. Mm-hmm. So
we always need to be reaching out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And if anybody is struggling with pornography, the Conqueror series is really good help, as well as last year at our gala, we had Joshua Broom come talk, and he used to be like America's number one porn star, and he came to know the Lord and is now a pastor, and he came and spoke at our gala, and he helps people too and has a lot of resources. Wow.
The story is
fascinating.
I have to look him up, but a safe search.
true. I have a filter on here. You may get blocked on your search.
Do be careful out there. But the book I always recommend is Finally Free. And I forget who wrote that. I forget who the author is, but Matt Morley, maybe something like that. But anyways, I like that one. I'll share those.
We can put some of those links in the description too. Because, this is a huge problem, and it's in our churches. Huge. Mm-hmm.
It's not talked about.
It's not. Right. Or when it is, people still aren't admitting to it.
You know, because it's embarrassing.
It is. And sin should be embarrassing, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't get help. Yeah. You know, and a lot of times people don't repent or change because they like it.
Yeah.
But there is help. There is a way out. And I know a lot of people are out there struggling and wishing they could break free, but they're afraid to ask for help because of the embarrassment or the shame. And so there are resources and there are ways to help. And we'll have some links in the bio for that. Anyway, it's great having you on.
Thank you.
This has been good.
It's been wonderful.
It's been a learning experience. It's been a learning experience though. And I think this is stuff, you know, we can take from here and we can learn. You know, once again, you know, the parents need to be involved with their kids. You know, the smartphone thing.
Yes.
What are the worst apps? Like, what are some of the apps that, like, or is it all of them? Just social media, stay off?
All the time. So there's a couple resources for parents. Protect Young Eyes, the website. They have all of the different devices, from Chromebooks to smartphones to Androids to, you know, whatever. And it goes through step by step how to put filters on them and how to protect your kids.
Okay.
So Protect Young Eyes. And then BARK, B-A-R-K, is also, now I'm not endorsing them, they're a business, but they have definite filters and technology that helps your whole house stay safe and independent.
Yeah. And there's a few filters like that. We have a whole house filter on the different one that does simulate. But filters are not fail-safe.
Exactly.
And people need to know that too. Just because they have a filter doesn't mean...
It does not.
You can get around filters so easy.
Well, and that's why we were talking about, you have to have the relationship with your kids. You have to have an ongoing conversation, not just a one and done, like the birds and the bees. Okay, I did it. Check.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing conversation, because even if you have a filter at your house, your child's going to go to a sleepover as somebody else's that doesn't have it.
Yeah.
And they just need to know the dangers.
If they see something, they need to know that they can come talk to you, and they can be addressed properly.
And our kids are getting inundated with people, strangers requesting them online to talk to them. Chat rooms are huge for grooming our kids. They just need to know the dangers. And I don't think people know. I don't think parents know how bad it is online. But the FBI estimates that there are 750,000 child predators online every day.
Whoa. Now, is that in a geographical area?
No.
The whole like, worldwide?
Yeah. Well, the United States.
Yeah, states. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Hmm. Yeah. And when I first started working in this, just, 10 years ago, that number was 25,000.
Wow.
750,000 was the latest that I've heard.
That's a bunch. And they're all like 14-year-old girls.
They're pretending to be, yeah.
And that's just an estimate, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes estimates like that are kind of conservative compared to what's really happening.
Right. Well, and now with AI, you know, we're starting to get calls of kids that are saying that they're seeing videos, like porn videos of them online, but they aren't, it's not them. Yeah. So AI is taking their face and putting it on videos and posting them online, and people believe it, you know? And so it's just, I don't know.
And even can copy a voice.
Yeah.
And so that if there's a phone call, they could have this, a sound of a, you know, young girl kind of a thing. So they go, oh, this is definitely a real person. Mm-hmm. You know, there's even kidnapping cases where they'd act like they have a child for ransom, and all they need is a few clips, like a voicemail, something like that. And they can completely, perfectly copy.
Yep.
Like even a lady goes, that's my daughter crying. I know it is. I know her cry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was AI.
And so they send the money.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's all, we could go on. This could be a 5-hour episode if we're not careful.
Yeah.
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been great to have you. We will post all the links. But once again, if you can just tell everybody your website and just a quick little... what we can do, we'll wrap it up here.
Yeah. So the Chains Interrupted website is www.chainsinterrupted.com. They can email us at info@chainsinterrupted.com. And I would just, you know, close in echoing that, you know, Christ is the answer here to everything. My life verse is Isaiah 1:17, you know, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless and the widow. And I think if we can go by biblical standards of what we as believers and Christians are supposed to be doing, and really seek out those vulnerable kids and people in our lives, we have them. You're thinking about who it is right now. It's in every family, in every situation, in every group. And if we can be that light and show them their true identity, their true worth, we'll have less people victimized, but even less traffickers and less fires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Awesome. Well, thank you for stopping in the studio.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
It's been good.